Ladies and gentlemen, fellas, we are here for championship week of Take the Points podcast, week 14, technically. I'm here via Skype with Dan Partridge and Ryan Spillett from Phoenix, Arizona. Gentlemen, hello.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, Tom.
Guys, we have a lot of good games to get into, but first, I think last week was a pretty good one, a pretty noteworthy one, and we're taping on Tuesday night, and the rankings just came out, so let's talk about last week, and let's talk about the rankings. So we have Ohio State beats Michigan in double overtime. We had Alabama crushes Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Actually, they didn't crush them. They won by 18, exactly the spread. Penn State, Wisconsin, Washington, and Colorado all win in advance to their conference championship games. We'll talk about Syracuse and UConn in a moment, but give me your thoughts on those games.
I guess I'll take it. There was a lot that happened last week. One thing that you didn't mention was USC taking care of Notre Dame, and Notre Dame's coach acting like a complete idiot once again on the sideline, Mr. Brian Kelly. Some horrible things have happened under his tenure. And I said it early in the year that don't be surprised if he's fired at the end of the year. And I'm still saying that he will not be the head coach next year at Notre Dame. Other stuff. Alabama continues to, march towards the Final Four. Pretty standard there. Impressive wins by Penn State. Colorado taking care of business. Washington looking great. Washington looking excellent. And of course, Michigan-Ohio State was a classic game. Michigan got hosed. That was pretty obvious.
How so?
There was a couple shady calls against them, and also ones that Ohio State should have had called against them. Also, that fourth down play was a little bit rough. I think that was pretty questionable. But it's kind of like what happened to Ohio State against Penn State. Yeah, I mean, Ohio State was winning in the fourth quarter, blah, blah, blah. They had a field goal blocked. But, it's college football. It comes down to if you win or lose. It's as simple as that. So it was a great weekend. A lot of interesting stuff. It sets up a great championship weekend, as usual. I'm excited for these games. I feel really good about these games, as good as I felt about any week all year. So excited. Here we go. Bring it on.
Ryan, what were your big takeaways from last week?
Probably the biggest takeaway was Chris Peterson put me in the shed way off on Washington State, Washington. And, I said all year I was going to ride or die with Leach, and he buried me, and that happens, and that's okay. That was impressive, and that's what I wanted to see from Washington. So that makes me feel really good about them in the playoff, that they can at least put up a good show.
So it's Tuesday night. We're recording. It's 8:40 right now. The new poll just came out about an hour and a half ago. No surprise, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Washington. After that, I guess if there's a controversial thing, it would be the next three. You've got Michigan holding tight at 5, followed by Wisconsin, followed by Penn State. First off, give it up for the Big Ten, the best conference in football. And anyone have a problem with Michigan remaining at 5, or are we good with that?
I don't know. I guess Michigan should stay at 5. It's just hard to say. Michigan had a huge win over Penn State, and they won 49-10. But then, they lose to Ohio State in a weird, small, controversial manner, and then Ohio State beats Penn State. So there's this weird kind of rotation in the Big Ten. I think if Penn State wins against Wisconsin, they'll go past Wisconsin, obviously, and both Michigan to the number 5 slot. So if Clemson or Washington lose. I think Penn State gets in with a win.
Okay, remind me when we get to the Big Ten championship game. I want to circle back to that Penn State Michigan game because it was a blowout on paper, but for reasons I will name, that Penn State team that lost that game is not the same Penn State team that's playing now, but we'll get to that later. First, we have to bid farewell to our hometown teams. Not the best season for either. The Syracuse Orange lose 76 to 61 to Pittsburgh, capping off their 4-6 season. That is 137 points. Who bet the over?
Not me, unfortunately, even though I was told to. Pitt overs apparently every week are locks. Pitt Panthers will win in their bowl game. Can't wait to see who they got. Yeah, hats off to them. Very interesting.
So Ryan, I'd like you to recap the Syracuse season and what you learned, and if you have hope going forward. But first, I want you to predict whether you think the first Syracuse Pitt basketball game will score fewer or more points than this football game. I say fewer.
Oh God, way fewer. Syracuse Pitt basketball?
Yeah.
I don't think either team gets in the 70s in that game.
I think that would be a great prop bet on Sportsbook, like sportsbook.antigua. If you're listening, please put that up as a prop bet. Put Syracuse Pitt first basketball game of the year, 76-61. Will each team score more or less than that?
There's no chance that goes, no chance.
Pitt Panthers overs. That offense is incredibly good. I'm telling you, like every time I watch them play, I love their play calling. It's some of the best in college football. It's incredible. So underrated.
We're going to do in 2 weeks from now, we're going to do our massive usual annual bowl special. And a little spoiler alert, we'll be picking the over in whatever Pitt game, wherever, whenever, doesn't matter. As well as Pitt to win the game, probably.
Pit money line over hook coming. Oh,
So
yes.
Ryan, what are your takeaways on the Syracuse season?
I think it was definitely a season of ups and downs. I thought that there's definitely some hope. That's for sure. It was entertaining. At least they were a fun team to watch. They were a team that was popping up on SportsCenter. That wide receiver, he's actually got a real chance to play at the next level, because even though he's going to probably combine at like a 4.7 speed, that dude just gets up and gets balls. Like he's really good, and I think that's pretty awesome that Syracuse could get some guys and get some recognition, get some guys in the NFL. I like Dino. I like Dino. I love the fact that he's not looking at other jobs that anyone's aware of. I think he's going to stay and try to do something pretty good there, and I like it.
Well, good. So the other hometown team, my hometown team, and Dan's alumni team is the UConn Huskies. And aside from our usual, hometown bias, the reason I want to talk about these two teams, there's a reason I picked these two. So Syracuse goes 4-6. UConn goes, what do they go? 3-9. 4-6. I feel like I have Syracuse's record wrong. Anyway, they're not very good. And UConn not very good either. However, there's light years difference between these two teams. UConn lost six in a row, including to the lowly Tulane last week. Dan, is there any hope for your school?
No, zero. There's no hope whatsoever. The stadium is not on campus. It's not accessible. It's not accessible for students to, get loaded in the dorms and for, 10,000 kids to show up to.
Hey Dan,
It's
CT Fast Track is scheduling a route to the stadium for next year.
that's not going to help. It's too far. You have to, no. It's too complicated. That was a mistake. There's no football culture. It's a basketball school. There's no reason to go there whatsoever. This was the absolute laugher of a year. They had the conflict with Central Florida, and that was when the wheels came off after that. And they then lost 41-3, 21-0, 30-0 and 38-13. That's not good. Just an awful season all the way around. I don't think it could have went worse. I think it, like, even though they went 3-9, I think that's worse than going, like, winless in some ways. So, awful job by UConn. There is no hope. I don't know. Have fun. It's never going to get better.
Dan Pete, crushing dreams. I will note one of those wins was against Cincinnati, which is solid. One of them is against Maine, so that doesn't even count.
I have a friend who knows someone who used to play at Maine, okay?
Our friend and guest of the show, George Villali, could have played at Maine if he wanted to.
Yes.
So I was thinking, I don't know why I was thinking of this analogy, but everybody knows the story of David versus Goliath, right? The big giant gets slayed by the little dude, David. I don't know if you guys know the full story or if everyone knows the full story. I think people think that those two just, you know, had a sword fight and the little guy overcame the big guy. For those who don't know the story of David and Goliath, actually, David won that battle because he had a little slingshot, or, you know, the old equivalent of a slingshot. And how he beat Goliath is, instead of doing hand-to-hand combat, he stood far away, he twirled this rock, he hit him between the eyes with a rock, and then when Goliath was knocked out, then he went up close and stabbed him with the sword. The reason I was thinking of that is because when you look at UConn and Syracuse, here are two teams that do not get the talent of an Alabama, an Ohio State, even like a Penn State or a Michigan State. The only way they're ever going to compete with the big teams is to use a different weapon, a weapon that can allow them to have an advantage. That weapon, of course, in college football is the spread offense. It's the only way. Syracuse went to the spread offense, and although they lost, you know, they're losing, scoring 61 points. If they could formulate a little bit of a defense, just a tiny bit, they could win some games next year. UConn, on the other hand, with defensive mastermind Bob Diaco, had no offense, just nothing. And the saddest thing is, they say, a lot of people think Diaco is going to keep his job and they're just going to fire the offensive coordinator and get a new one. I wouldn't expect much. As Dan P said, no hope. But the only way UConn, with UConn talent, can play against some of the bigger teams, even the bigger teams in the AAC, let alone Power 5 conferences, is they have to get the equivalent of David's slingshot. They have to get the weapon that allows them to, beat teams. And to me, that's the spread offense. I'm curious what you guys think. And this doesn't have to just be about UConn, like, how does any small school compete with a bigger school?
You have to hope that you hire a coach who is an excellent motivator and can somehow recruit players who are talented and overlooked by other, you know, higher, more prestigious programs. And just hope you kind of get, you know, a few players who can help change your program. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But at least you need a creative coach that will give you a shot.
So, you also really, really need continuity. That's really the biggest thing. And that's, you know, why you can see in basketball, you know, the Villanovas and the Butlers who don't get the five-star recruits, you know, they have those waves. Every 3 or 4 years, they get that, you know, two really good classes in a row, and they stick it out together. And by the time they're seniors, you know, they know how to play, and they can play, you know, against any type of scheme because they've seen it all at that point. And I think that's really the biggest thing with a lot of those schools. I mean, look at, you know, like Oregon is a great example where, you know, it was continuity. You know, Chip Kelly was an assistant coach and he worked his way up, became the head coach, and then Helfrich was his assistant and all that. And like, it kept going. And obviously once they started getting good, you could start attracting more of those five-star players, and they could get, you know, the LaMichael Jameses and those types of guys, and DeForest Buckner and those types. But, you know, you'll get those guys but you got to win first. And I think that's a good way to win is to keep that continuity. Hope you get two or three good classes in a row that stay together.
So that leads into my next question then, which is related. Let's say, well, let's look at Houston. So they got a hot coaching prospect, Tom Herman. They've been great the last couple years, much better than their program average. Now he's off to Texas. What happens to the Houston program? How do they maintain it? And is it worth it for other schools to go out and get the like hot rising star, even if you know he's going to be there 2 to 3 years and leave? Like if you're, you know, Illinois or Purdue, do you make a run at PJ Fleck of Western Michigan, knowing that it would be a stepping stone to a bigger job? Dan's shaking his head.
Yes, of course. Without a doubt.
So do you predict good things for Houston over the next few years, Ryan?
Yes, with this caveat. These guys also, besides being excellent head coaches, need to be really, really good developers of staffs. And I think that's where a guy like Herman is a guy worth bringing in because everyone knew he was going to – he has got connections. He's been around, you know, Urban Meyer and Texas high school football. Like, that guy knows everybody. And if Houston can somehow keep Major Applewhite and bring him in as the head coach from a offensive coordinator, Houston will be just fine. Like, totally fine if they can keep Major Applewhite. I think that continuity – that system is what's important. You know, he's the next Cliff Kingsbury.
Okay, so PJ Fleck looks like the next guy. He might get a big time job this year, but it sort of looks like he's going to have to do a medium sized stepping stone job. I mentioned Purdue, Illinois, just because they're, you know, teams that may be hiring that are nearby, but it really could be anywhere. Do you go after PJ Fleck, and you know what do you do to ensure if you were to get him that it's not just like 2 years of success and then a drop off?
You go to Notre Dame. That's what he's doing.
You think he can make that move? See, I'm unclear whether PJ Fleck can make that level of a jump from a MAC school to like a Notre Dame, Oregon, LSU. Well, not LSU, but that level of school.
There he can, because again, it's regional. He knows the area. He's got relationships with high schools. He can bring in really quality assistants from other programs in that area that know the recruiting too. You know, he's not going to just bring his Western Michigan guys with him. Like, he's probably going to grab a quarterback coach from an Illinois and, you know, line coach from Wisconsin. He knows people, so he could do it. I think he can make that jump.
Okay. Dan, any thoughts?
No, I pretty much agree with that. I think when Kelly leaves Notre Dame, I think he's the most obvious hire for them.
All right. Well, I guess now's a good time to segue into the lines. If you want to double back, we'll go through every conference and we can talk about other things. But first up, MAC Championship game, Friday, December 2nd, Ohio at Western Michigan. Western Michigan, a 19-point favorite. I want to begin with an apology. I picked Toledo to beat Western Michigan last week. I had a hot streak of MAC games. I picked a Sun Belt game. That was just a flat-out bad pick by me. The reason I did it was because every single year since we've been doing the podcast and even before, there seems to be an undefeated hot MAC team. They always lose at the end. This Western Michigan team is different. They look great. They have Corey Davis, who is just like a stud receiver. They've got a great hot prospect coach. They're good. I'm not going against them again. Lay the points. Feel free to disagree, but I won't be burned again.
Right.
I agree. It's a lot of points, but it's worth it. And the main reason that I like it so much is because it's actually not at Western Michigan. It's at Ford Field, home of the Detroit Lions, indoor turf dome, like you said, stud receiver. That just that plays into their hands.
Okay. Dan, you have a pick on this game?
I'm going to take Ohio in the points just because now you are apologizing to Western Michigan and going with them. I am going to go against you this week, completely go against you, and take Ohio just because of that.
Dan, how much of your life gambling strategy and, you know, sports gambling and just gambling on regular things in life has been based on just doing the opposite of me?
About 22%, but it should have been higher.
It's a good strategy. I have the worst luck with definitely with cards, you know, poker, pitch, anything. I'm a little bit better with sports gambling.
I'd like to apologize to Western Michigan. You guys are really good. That's jinx, jinx, Ohio. And you better not bet Ohio now and screw me over again. You stick with Western Michigan and you accept it.
Let's be clear. I have no ties nor do I care about either of these programs. Like, I'm just going based on what I've seen all year. This Western Michigan team is different than the MAC teams of previous years.
Mm-hmm.
So, fellas, we'll
Ohio
start.
Outright money line.
No chance. Mm-hmm. We will start with Ryan and then to Dan. Who do we want to see Western Michigan play in the New Year's Six?
Ooh.
Ryan?
I want to see Western Michigan play Michigan.
Ooh, interesting. Power defense against the high-scoring offense. I like it. Dan?
And obviously the Michigan-Western Michigan interstate battle is very cool. West Virginia can play against Oklahoma State after they win somehow. It will just be like the irrelevant game that nobody cares about. Get out of the way.
So I think Michigan's a little too good. I want to see them play a team that is known to collapse in big games. I want to see them play a team that has been known to blow a BCS game before. What I want to see is Mr. Bob Poops drop in a game 54-52 to Western Michigan.
Now you're talking my language, Z.
And if there's a Statue of Liberty play involved, I'm all for it. So, yeah.
That sounds good. That game would be most likely at the Cotton Bowl. So that would be a home field game for Oklahoma for sure.
Sure. But you know Oklahoma. You know, they get that home field. They relax a little bit. They don't prep as hard as they should, especially when they get Western Michigan. Oh, fuck this. Why are we playing this loser MAC team? Next thing you know, Samaje Perine's out at the club the night before. And, you know, they're down 24-0 before they know it. Anyway, that'll be interesting. Pac-12 championship game. Colorado versus Washington. Washington -7.5, over under 58. This one is also Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. I defer to you guys. Ever since I had a baby at the beginning of the season, I don't watch Pac-12. Way past my bedtime. Danny?
Everyone loves Washington because they just smashed Washington State. Chris Peterson is superior coach, blah, 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 blah. But Colorado's been amazing all year. You're getting a touchdown with them. I really like Colorado to keep this game close. I'm going to take them. Plus a touchdown, and I also like the over in this game. Colorado, team of the year against the spread outside of Alabama.
Ryan? There it is.
Totally agree. I mean, I think that's the points is the key. If you can get that, especially if it's 7.5 and you get that half point, I think that the back door is wide open in that game. Colorado can chuck it deep. I like the points. They can win this game outright, for sure. Absolutely.
Normally, we advise sort of waiting until the last minute and seeing the weather and changes and injuries, but there's been so much line movement this week already in all of these games. I think I would advise people, if you like a line and you think it's going to move in the opposite direction, to jump on it. In this case, my guess is that it's going to move toward Washington. So if you like Washington, I would jump on it. If you like Colorado, I would wait. But that's just me. Dan's giving the thumbs up, though. Vegas Outsider Dan Partridge agrees.
Yes, and I'm excited because Vegas Outsider will be a Vegas Insider this weekend.
We'll get to that at the end of the show. We're going to talk about Dan and Ryan's excellent adventure to Las Vegas coming up. Big 12, Saturday, December 3rd. Now we get into the big day, probably the best matchups of the college football season. And Dan P is rubbing his hands because he's got a lot of thoughts on the lines. So
excited.
Let's start with the lesser of the two games in terms of its overall meaning. Baylor at West Virginia, sexual assault U going out to Appalachia, -17.5 over under 67.
9-2 West Virginia at home weekend after Thanksgiving against a team that began the season 6-0 with the attitude of, we'll show you, we don't need any of your off the field. We're going to show you, you know, we're going to take care of business on the field. They haven't won since they beat Kansas on October 15th. They've lost 5 games in a row. Now they have to get on a plane and leave, you know, warm-ish, you know, Waco, Texas, and fly to West Virginia, which we've talked about before. I don't think there's an airport in the state of West Virginia. So they probably have to fly to, like, Ohio or Pittsburgh or something.
You go to Pittsburgh, and then there may be, like, a mule ride involved at some point.
Probably a mule ride. That's very fair. So they have no reason to go there. Players have no motivation. The players moving on to the NFL draft are looking just not to get injured. The coaching staff will all be gone, every single one of them. There will be a new head coach. There's no reason or incentive to keep one player or one coach on the Baylor coaching staff since the scandal. It makes total sense to clean house. This game means nothing to them. On the other side, like I said, West Virginia is looking to win 10 games. That's a big number for Holgorsen. That will give him job security for a long time. Just overall, I think this is going to be an absolute woodshed. This is a game that no one's really going to care about because it's not a championship game. So there'll be a lot of action later in the game, you know, later in the afternoon. Love West Virginia to absolutely roll 55-10. Woodshed, lock of the week, West Virginia -17. I think it should be 28.5 or more. There you go.
So that's it. Ryan, we'll get to your pick, but I want to read this because I just thought of it. It's something I saw yesterday, and I want to read this because it's hilarious. So Jerry Falwell, some people know him as the religious mega church TV sermon guy from the 80s. He runs Liberty University, which is a religious school, and they just hired Baylor AD Ian McCaw to run their program. He's the former Baylor AD dismissed because of the sexual assault case. Here's the statement that Jerry Falwell released about hiring this guy who was part of the Baylor sexual assault case. Quote, "You look at what Baylor was able to do during his tenure, comma, it fits perfectly with where we see our sports programs going. This is an exciting time for us." Somebody needs to hire a PR person ASAP.
People don't understand. There is the United States, and then there's the state of Texas, which is a little bit unique, and things like this fall through the cracks and aren't called out. Love Texas. Very interesting people. Of Texas.
I'm hoping it's a miscommunication and just a poor choice of words and that they don't want to actually be the next school to have an incident. Sometimes it's hard to tell.
Publicity is publicity. You know, these, people put out these leaked sex tapes all the time. Just saying, it's along the same lines.
That's true. And it is, let us remind everyone again, 2016, year of the dick. Hashtag year of the dick. Speaking of that, so last week we were supposed to give an update on the Kardashian sacrifice. We failed to do that because we ran out of time. I guess, Ryan, if you have a pick on Baylor or anything else you want to add, no? Okay, I wanted to give you a chance because I know once we get into this, that'll be the end of that. Dan, why don't you remind everyone of what the Kardashian sacrifice is, hashtag Kardashian sacrifice, and how and when you came up with this. And then there was an important update last week.
Yeah, we have a theory that the at some point the Kardashians will no longer have the sort of attention that they need and require due to lack of them doing anything important. So at some point, you know, after they're finished marrying rappers and having, you know, TV shows about nothing, something's going to have to happen. So we're saying that someone's getting killed off, someone in the family or really close to the family, but probably a Kardashian will be killed off. There's some sort of meeting in an underground vault that went down, and they know when it's going to happen. We thought it was going to be Rob, but it could be Khloe at this point. It's really interesting. Kim, not out of the woods. What if Kanye killed Kim? Where would that kind of lead? Like, and like he was, you know, like obviously guilty and he went to jail. Where would that kind of rank in all-time like stories if Kanye just killed Kim? I don't want to be morbid, but I'm saying that would be the biggest story like of all time, wouldn't it? I mean,
it's definitely top five. It would definitely hurt his presidential chances.
If that happens, we will cancel the podcast. Just to let
out of respect. Yeah, I agree. If that happens, Take the Points is done. Maybe we'll start like a new podcast that's just us making Nostradamus-esque predictions, which is basically what I want to do anyway. I'm done with college football.
Yep.
So Kanye freaked out a week ago.
Yep, he went
maybe
crazy.
You guys know better. Ryan, I think you know this story better than I do.
Well, actually, a friend at work, her cousin was at the show. Was at the show in, I believe it was Sacramento.
Yes,
where he, where he lost his mind, and the text that I saw was quite hilarious. It was basically a rundown of the entire concert in like 7 lines. It basically started off with Kanye shows up an hour late. Next line, Kanye opens with the same song twice. Kanye starts talking about politics. Kanye starts talking shit about other rappers. Kanye ties his shoe. Kanye does one more song, drops the mic and walks off. 3 songs, 45 minutes of political and rapper beef talk. I don't know why they added the he tied his shoe, the recap, but that was the recap that I saw, and that's quite hilarious. And also it ties into the fact that he's supposed to be playing upstate New York like next week. And he saw that snowstorm and said, screw this shit, I'm out.
I think he canceled the whole tour, right? Our suspicion was just didn't want to go to upstate New York. So he canceled the entire tour.
All of it. Yep.
Can't blame him. I was there a few weeks ago and it was already snowing in October.
It's no good. It's no good at all. Let me add my theory to this. And my theory is whatever the one, I don't know these Kardashians, but there's one of them that's dating Tristan Thompson on the Cavs. She's going to go. Someone's going to make a phone call if that chemistry starts going on that on LeBron's team. He'll make a call. He knows people in LA. She's the one that's going to go. If the Cavs lose like 4 games in a row, I would start keeping an eye on her.
So you think the Kardashian sacrifice will be the hashtag Kardashian murder?
So,
whatever it takes to get LeBron his next MVP.
Because when we invented the hashtag, the idea was that the gods would have to, you know, they would sacrifice one of them to the gods. Meaning it could be any sort of like accident, car crash, overdose.
Oh, it's
like
going to
sort of
look
thing.
Like an accident. Oh, it's going to look like an accident, Tom.
Yeah.
I would say make sure she goes to Jiffy Lube. On a weekly basis because those brakes might not work.
LeBron James. Never mind. So we're still saying even though Kanye was hospitalized with quote unquote exhaustion, we're saying he will not be the sacrifice?
No.
He's too good and powerful. He's like the one good one we don't want to lose.
He's going to be president in 4 years, so
that's true. America needs him to stay around.
America needs The Rock. You guys can all screw off.
It's going to be so bad. Like, we joke, but I really do think in like 12 years, it's going to be like The Rock's son versus like one of Will Smith's kids.
Yeah. Earlier than that. Like next election.
Whatever. I'm going to write in LeBron every year.
All right.
He's the president.
You know who deserves to be president? This is another classic Tom Z segue back into sports. Mike Gundy with his awesome mullet. Imagine sending him with his amazing... He's at peak mullet right now, by the way. Imagine sending him over to Iran with that mullet. They'll be like, we're not fucking with this guy.
He looks like he can drink a 30-pack in a sitting and still be fine. Watch game film afterwards.
What beer does Mike Gundy drink with this mullet?
Oh,
that's I feel like he's surpassed PBR. We're talking like High Life, the champagne of beers.
Ooh,
I'm thinking maybe.
I think he's drinking, Bud Heavies.
Bud Heavy's good. Heavy.
Yeah, he's a Bud Heavy guy.
I was thinking like natural, not Natty Light, not Natty Ice, just natural.
Oh, he's not a light beer guy. We can all agree on that.
Yes, I think so. So Oklahoma State at Oklahoma, 11-point spread, over-under 78. This is a 12:30 game. Dan, thoughts?
I think it's way too many points. If you look at the history of Oklahoma playing Oklahoma State, these games are usually pretty damn close. I'm going to say take Oklahoma State and the points at home for sure.
Dan, are you trying to play some trap music and it's not working? It looked like you were doing something.
Yes, I was actually looking for some. You're actually pretty smart. That's exactly.
We've known each other too long. It's like we just do one look and it's like Dan is looking up a 2 Chainz song right now. I can tell.
I was trying to find music to make that my trap of the week. Yes, love Oklahoma State and the points. Way too many. Vegas opened this line at 14. People are pounding Oklahoma State, and it's dropped to 12 already in some spots. By the time I get to Vegas, I hope it's still over 10. Way too many points. Love Oklahoma State.
Ryan?
Totally agree. It'll definitely stay over 10 because it is in Norman, actually. So I think that'll definitely stay double digits, although it should be probably 6.5.
All right. I don't have a strong feel for this game. Unlike you guys, I could definitely picture a cheap backdoor cover by Oklahoma winning by 12 or so. I think that line's pretty accurate. I think you're going to see a game that goes back and forth and then a cheap cover by Oklahoma. I think they win by about 12 or 13. But I'll be staying away. Now, here's one I will not be staying away on. SEC Championship game, 4 p.m. Florida versus Alabama, 24-point line, 41-point over-under. This line started at 21 and has rapidly moved up. As I said, it's Tuesday night right now. We're only recording on Tuesday night, so there's a long time to go. This game's gone 3 points in the direction of Alabama. It's going to go more. Dan and Ryan, we talked on our group text, and I said that this one should be at least 24.5 when it first came out, and we're almost there. So do we bet now? Do I just put it in now? Bet the house?
You can. If you are really into Alabama, yes, go ahead, because it's just going to keep going up. I would be wary just because every single person and their mother and their uncle and their sister, they're all going to bet Alabama. It's also Vern Lundquist's last game calling ever, which is crazy for a guy who's been calling games since the 1960s. So for that reason, I love a Florida first half bet. You can probably get them at around 14 points. Just pray Alabama doesn't score 14 in the first half. Maybe get a punt return or something. But I'm not going to bet the whole game spread because of Vern and because Vegas stands to lose way too much money. But I will take Florida first half. You guys are probably pretty shocked. That's all.
Dan, first off, the number one rule of the podcast, do not bet against Alabama. Also, Dan, President Trump went on Twitter today and he said that under his administration, anyone who bets against Alabama will be jailed. I agree with him. It's a good law.
Yeah, he's probably right.
Ryan, pick.
38-0 or 41-3. That's the way this is going to go. I would like to see if there's a prop out there for a shutout. If there's a shutout prop, and if you can get that at maybe 6 or 7 or 8 to 1, I would definitely think about, putting 10 or 20 bucks on that.
See, I think that Florida has too much pride to be shut out. I like your 41-3 pick. I think Alabama has traditionally not let up in this SEC championship game. This is usually where they make a statement going into the playoffs. So I know how lines work, and I know how, going against the public's usually the way to go. But in this specific case, I will be betting heavily on Alabama, as I have all year.
Did you guys hear the Nick Saban press conference yesterday?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
Well, the reporter who asked him, with all these other teams with losses, you guys could theoretically, afford to lose a game and still probably
Oh,
make the playoff and
Jesus.
still be a one seed. Yeah, as you can imagine, Saban, was not too thrilled with it, but my favorite line about that was he was talking about, what is, acceptable, and he basically looked right at the reporter and said, "Losing any game is unacceptable." And I was like, "Okay, my mind was made up in the car listening to that press conference that this is going to be a shutout." That's
So,
why.
okay. I think Florida will sneak it in there at some point, get 3 or 7, but yeah, Nick Saban, there's no let up. I've never seen anything like it in any sport. There's just no down week ever with his teams. If you beat them, you really have to beat them. And Alabama screws up from time to time in their execution, but they never really come out flat. They do on occasion against like Tennessee Chattanooga for a half, and then Saban goes back and beats the crap out of them. So that happens every once in a while.
Also, keep in mind the Saban former assistant coach. He loves to hammer his proteges. And, unlike some coaches who try to maybe take it a little bit easy on him, he loves it. And there's nobody that was going to love it more than Nick Saban, because he replaced McElwain as the offensive coordinator. So he's going to be dialing up all sorts of weird shit. There's going to be some tight ends running screens and wide receivers throwing passes. Lane Kiffin's going to go all out in this game because he wants to show up the guy he replaced.
That's a good point, and that's the big insult Nick Saban can say to him is like, you were all right, but you're no Lane Kiffin.
I would take that personally.
Yes. Saban is basically like a Walter White in the scene where he's like, "Say my name." He might actually do that to McElwain after the game. Say it.
Say it now.
He's just gonna walk up to him like Shang Tsung and say, "Your soul is mine."
McElwain, huh, it's too bad. He's got a bright future. I hope that Saban doesn't take his soul, but he's been known to do that. So,
He's a soul taker.
speaking of which, they're not on the board, but anyone have anything they want to say about Eddie O becoming the permanent coach of LSU? How they stack up against well, especially against Alabama, but just in general, the next few years?
It's pretty much a total mess unless he's just the motivator and they get Lane Kiffin to be the offensive coordinator. But if that happens, then I love it. But if that doesn't happen, it's bad.
See, you think that Lane might actually leave and go to LSU, despite the fact he's at the best program. It would be a lateral move. Maybe he'd get more money, but in terms of prestige, definitely a step, slight step down or lateral. Why do you think he might do that?
I think if he moves to LSU and he wins against Alabama, he can coach anywhere in the whole country.
Exactly. So you think this would be a step for him to try to get a head coaching job?
Yeah, and he can work with Eddie O, who is a lot nicer of a guy than Nick Saban, to be honest with you, and make more money and better for your career. And it's the ultimate challenge. And if he can win against Alabama, and he should be able to at least compete or improve their offense, then he can go coach anywhere, maybe back to the NFL even.
Okay, so that sort of answers my question, but I was going to say, if his goal is to be a head coach, why not just go right to like Arizona State now, or someplace where he could get that job right now?
Because
Sean Payton has a short shelf life in New Orleans, and I think that if he goes to LSU, he's putting himself in a prime position in the next 2 to 3 years to take Sean Payton's job.
That's a good idea.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a good, really good conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that never crossed my mind. I like it, though. All right, this is, like I said, I just want to do a prediction podcast where we say Nostradamus-esque predictions. Imagine if Nostradamus just spent all his time on sports. If he was like, yeah, there's going to be a war or something. But what I'm really concerned about is when the Cubs win the World Series.
Very important.
If he's got things to say about the Bills, that's all I want to know about.
Oh.
I don't think the Bills were in any of his books.
No more Bills talk. This is like 4 podcasts in a row, you fuckers.
I have to slip one in every episode.
We didn't even say anything, Dan. We just mentioned the word Bills.
It's in college. You want me to talk about some other random shit? Move on. Let's go.
All right. Virginia Tech against Clemson. Clemson minus 10. Over under 58.5. 8 p.m. The ACC championship game. This line started at 8.5, so this one's even moved. I still think Clemson may be undervalued in this line, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think Clemson hammers them really
pronouncing
bad.
It Dabo style.
Clemson. I think they hammer Vodtech and they make a statement and just say, you know, we kind of jacked around all year, but it doesn't matter. We're going to the playoff, even with one loss. So I think they hammer Vodtech. Plus, Vodtech's coming off a big win. I know they've improved as the year went on, but I think this is the game where, you know, Clemson really puts it all together. They have a lot of guys going to the NFL, and I think they put on a show on national TV.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations to Virginia Tech. It, you know, a couple months ago, nobody would have probably guessed that they'd even be in this game. So they did well to end out the season. Yep. I like Clemson. Ryan?
Clemson.
All right. 3-0. Let's move along then. The Big Ten championship game, Penn State versus Wisconsin. Wisconsin's a 2-point favorite at the moment. Over-under 46.5, classic Big Ten over-under. 8 p.m. game. Okay, so here's what I wanted to say earlier about Penn State. I saw this stat earlier today. Excuse me. Penn State defense this season, first 6 games, 208 yards allowed, 4.5 yards a carry, 14 rushing TDs against them. Last 6 games, 83.7 yards per game, 2.3 yards per carry, 4 rushing TDs against them. So it's less than half of the production against them. And that started with the Ohio State game in October. Now, if you don't follow Penn State, you might just think, oh, you know, they got motivated. They just started to play hard. If you do know about Penn State, of course you know, that was the time when Jason Kabinda and Brandon Bell came back from their injuries. Penn State started the season without all 3 of their, you know, to be starting linebackers. One of them, who's very good, is out for the year. He won't be back. But 2 of them returned for that Ohio State game. And what we saw was a totally different team, because that's exactly what they were. Michigan beat Penn State 49-10, but if you watch the game, Michigan ran up the middle for 7-8 yards every single play. Just run up the middle, run up the middle. Two good linebackers would have changed a lot. I know Michigan outplayed them. I'm not saying Penn State would have won, but I think it would have been a much closer game had those two, you know, best two players on their defense been in there in those key positions. So that's why when I see that big loss, I don't hold that against them as much as some other people do. That's why if they are to win the Big Ten championship game, I think they definitely have to jump Michigan in the rankings. You know, both teams have two losses. It's sort of like the Big 12 a few years ago. Remember when like Crabtree played and it was like each team had one loss? And there's sort of that circular logic, like Penn State beat Ohio State, Ohio State beat Michigan, Michigan beat Penn State. So that sort of head-to-head thing, you can't really use that anymore. So I am not saying they'll make the playoff, but if they win, they should at least be ranked fifth. Meanwhile, Wisconsin offense, I wanted to, you know, let's not make this all about Penn State. Wisconsin offense over the last three games, 42.7 points a game. And we're talking about a team that, like, you know, won 16-14 against LSU and lost 14-7 against Michigan. So they've stepped it up dramatically as well. So I don't have a pick because I think this is about as even of a matchup as you'll find. If it goes up one more point and it's Wisconsin minus three, then I say take the points, take that field goal. But I think I'll have to just stay away and enjoy. So with all that said, let's start with Ryan. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what you said was right on point as far as Penn State's advantage is their rush defense and Wisconsin's advantage is their rush offense. So that's going to be a really fun matchup to see. I know it's super classic Big Ten over under, but, you know, I definitely would look a little bit towards the under. I know it's in a dome and that plays into it a little bit, but neither of these teams, I don't think a dome really matters or 40 degrees doesn't matter. I think either way. So I would look more towards the under. But like you said, I think this is just a real close matchup.
All right. Over to you, Dan.
I really like the over in this game and I like the over in the Big Ten championship game every single year. It's indoors at the Colt Stadium. That stadium usually has a lot of points. It's only 45, 46 and a half, whatever. Penn State's offense can score. Wisconsin's offense has turned it on. People have been talking about Wisconsin unders all year, but the last, I think, three or four games went over pretty easily. I'll bet the over in that game, and I'll probably bet Penn State money line as well. Those would be my two bets.
All right. Any chance that Penn State and Ohio State both make the playoff?
No.
All right. What if, you know, Clemson or Washington loses? Then do we put Penn State in?
Colorado's in if they win against Washington and Clemson lose. Then probably Oklahoma would have to lose as well. And then I guess Wisconsin would be the next team in.
So rank all of the teams that currently aren't in the top four in the order, assuming they win out. Like, who would you put in? Would Colorado be your top pick? So Colorado, Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan, Oklahoma.
For me, it would be Colorado because their losses are at Michigan where their quarterback got hurt and against USC, who's arguably the, you know, top two or three team in the country right now. So their two losses are really quality losses and really good explanations for the losses. Oklahoma also has some good excuses. They lost early in the year, but then choked late as well against Houston, who's turned out to be kind of a weird up and down team. So I guess if Clemson lost and Washington lost, Colorado would be in, Alabama would be in, Ohio State would be in, and I guess probably you would get Wisconsin as a fourth team and a second Big Ten team in.
Do you think the Oklahoma State Cowboys have any chance?
No, they're out.
All right. Well, those are the big games. There are two others that we want to talk about. Ryan has a pick. Georgia State at Idaho, -6.5.
Yeah, love Idaho here. Georgia State, 3-8. So even if they win, they have no shot at a bowl game. Idaho is 7-4 and at home. And it just makes total sense. I think the biggest things that I looked at was, you know, in the last five games, Georgia State has lost to UL Monroe by 2 scores, Arkansas State by 2 scores, whereas Idaho has beaten ULL by 2 scores and smashed New Mexico State by 30. So I just look at that, and then I look, the biggest thing that I thought was that really kind of pushed it over the edge for me was that Georgia State has a really shitty rush defense, and Idaho can run the ball. They prefer to throw it, but they could definitely run the ball a bit, and I think that makes a difference. So for me, 6.5 does not seem right. This probably should be a 2-score spread, so I like Idaho.
All right. Now, Dan, this one goes to you. The biggest game of the year, the game we love to pick every December, the battle for Louisiana, UL Lafayette at UL Monroe, one of our favorites. Let me break it down, and then you can offer a pick. So you got Lafayette, 5-6. You got Monroe, 4-7. Both have faced similar levels of opponents and gotten beaten by similar margins. Lafayette did give Georgia a scare a couple weeks ago. Lafayette appears to be the slightly better of the two teams, but Monroe is at home. So, Danny, you got to pick one. No riding the fence in this game.
I'm going to take ULL at 5-6 so they can get a win and get to 6-6 and get bowl eligible, because what's a bowl season without the ULL Raging Cajuns playing on December 22nd? So it just feels right. Laying the 6.5 too. Fuck it.
All right. Ryan, you want to pick this game?
I agree with Dan. I think that the number one factor is just the 5 wins. They win this, they get to 6, they get a bowl game. It's huge. Huge.
The only problem with them getting to a bowl game is, like, for most teams, if you're like Rutgers, I mean, not this year, but just use them as an example, or UConn or something, you get a trip to St. Petersburg, Florida. It's a nice vacation. But if you're UL Lafayette and you make a bowl, what bowl do they send you to? The New Orleans Bowl.
Every time.
So they could, like, literally walk there.
Yep.
I mean, not literally, but, you know, they could take a very short bus ride.
It's fantastic.
So I'm saying, I'm not sure it has the same pull as for other teams. But with that said, I'm going to make it unanimous. I'm going to go with UL Lafayette this year. So take the points as favorite game of the year. We are 3 for UL Lafayette, -7. Fellas, that's the last game. That's it.
Quick week.
This is a good one, though. This is one of those weeks where it's quality over quantity.
Love this week.
So
super excited.
Anything either of you want to add about football? If not, we could touch on a couple other topics before we go.
I think I'm good on foosball.
All right. Well, I was hoping you'd say something, because I don't actually have other topics to talk about.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
So,
Vegas.
Oh, right. Of course.
Yeah.
So you two are headed to Vegas. Tell us about your plans and what you hope to achieve on this glorious weekend.
Well, we're going up Friday, staying at the Venetian, which is a 24-hour sports book, which is nice. We'll be there in time for the Pac-12 title game, and I'll be there to bet Colorado for sure. Nothing really else on the schedule. I like to go to Vegas and eat a lot. That's one of my things.
Eat as in like buffets, or eat as in like high quality meals?
Combination of both. You know, it's a great city because there's a lot of really, you know, nice high-end restaurants. So it'd be nice to pick one and get a good bite to eat, bet some college, maybe see what's going on in town. go out and have a couple drinks. It'll be nice to relax for two nights. So, looking forward to it. Sneaking up already. And then we'll take off Sunday. And we'll be back in Phoenix pretty early on Sunday. So, there you go. Gonna be fun.
Ryan, what are you looking forward to the most?
Two things. One, I am looking forward to the noodle bar. Every single time I've ever been in Las Vegas, I've had at least one meal there. Real excited about that. And the other thing I'm real excited about, Tom, is wearing the official Take the Points t-shirt in the sports book. I'm going to
Same.
be promoting the shit out of Take the Points podcast. Hopefully we get some winners. People see me with some winning tickets, some chips,
We better get these picks right. You might get murdered up there.
and while we're saying that real quick, a shout out to my brother Tim, hooking us up with the Take the Points official t-shirts. Couldn't be happier with that. So thank you, Tim. I know he's a listener, and he made the shirts on his own. We never ordered them or asked. He's a fan, and he hears us talking about advertising the podcast, so he made us some t-shirts. So thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. They look great. I
They're
love it.
excellent.
All right. There's a
Oh,
few
wait, hold
things.
on.
Yes, Dan is more. Sorry.
I want two more little Vegas tidbits to add. One, I'm driving and we get to watch movies in my car on the way up now, thanks to the new stereo slash DVD player my girlfriend got me as a gift for my birthday. So me and Ryan are excited to watch DVDs on the drive. We'll see if that's a safe move, driving in the middle of nowhere roads from here to Vegas.
Oh,
That's
CNN
one.
breaking news. Phoenix area men killed driving off the highway while watching Dazed and Confused.
Kroll Show season two on DVD is definitely getting watched in the car. I've not that I've already not done that once before, but that's one. And two, any Take the Points Vegas listeners who are in hiding will probably be at Caesar's Palace Sportsbook on a Saturday. So there you go.
So, for the record, Take the Points is now the one and only podcast that promotes excessive illegal gambling,
Yes.
rampant marijuana use,
Heavy.
heavy alcohol abuse,
Totally fine.
and quality distracted driving.
Very important.
Yeah, why not?
Driving's too easy.
Got to make it more like a video game.
Have to make it harder so, when I show up in Vegas, I'm ready to gamble and I'm sharp. I can't just be like looking at the, oh, look, there's a cactus and a mountain over there. I mean, I need to be engaged. Get me ready to gamble. Get me fueled. Speaking of
Give me
fuel,
fuel, give me fire,
give me
give me
that
that
which
which
I
I
desire.
desire.
Yes, I'm going to go to the grocery store tonight and get some Red Bulls and vodka. Sorry, just got ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you're gonna see another side of me. You want to see me rip that Take the Points podcast shirt off Hulk Hogan style on a table
Ryan,
in Caesars? I'll do it.
I do want to see that. We'll get you another one.
doesn't handle alcohol like most people, I'll say.
Anyone who rips off their Take the Points t-shirt, anyone who orders a Take the Points t-shirt from Tim Spillett, rips it off in public while videotaping it and sends me the videotape, gets a free replacement t-shirt.
Fair enough.
Absolutely.
So, we got a few more minutes before we gotta go. I'll give you guys some topics and you can choose from. We might as well just keep it all sports related, this show. I've been watching a documentary about sports parents. We've got some experience with that. We could talk about that if you want. Dan, you could give your annual restaurant etiquette tips or sports restaurant etiquette tips for people, because this will probably be a big weekend for your Buffalo Wild Wings and your Chili's and whatnot.
Okay.
You're nodding. Let's do that one. So,
Yeah.
you work at a restaurant. A lot of people come in to watch football for a long time. What's the appropriate way to behave, to have a fun time, but not be a dick? Even though it's the year of the dick.
I think you need to order a lot and order a lot so that the place that you're at makes money off of the alcohol and food you're purchasing, and B, you're over tipping as you go along, and not just say, yeah, put it on my tab, because they aren't aware that you're going to give a big tip. So if I'm planning on sitting there for 3 or 4 hours, I'm constantly paying as I go and adding, a 25 to 30, 35% tip to show, hey, I'm cool, I'm going to sit here. Not, yeah, put it on my bill, and then I'll see in 3 hours when I get 16%. I mean, that's not cool.
Now,
So,
is
one.
that to cut in, is that because of shift changes and because the person might be gone? Or is it just because,
No.
people get skeptical of people who hang around too long?
Of course, yeah, that. It's just kind of what people automatically, Here's what happened. People really have no interest in how good or bad their waiter is, or the service, or their food. It's just math. They look at the tab, they leave their flat 20% or 18% or 15%, and they leave. So if you're sitting there and you're like, God, this asshole's sitting here for the whole, afternoon watching games, they wait on hundreds of people every week, and they're used to the same percentages. So they're gonna think that you're leaving, 18%. So show them that that's not the case, and pay as you go. Yeah, hey, I'll take a Miller Lite, and it's, hey, what do you want? A Miller Lite? It's like, all right, they're each, freezy math, $1. Give them their $2 for payment plus two more. It's important to keep them going early, is what I'm trying to say. So that's my one restaurant etiquette. Two, this goes for all restaurants, not even restaurants, but just any food place in general. Unless you have an allergy, which is acceptable, just order the fucking food how it comes. There's a reason it comes like that. Either a chef decided that, or there's a research group or something. Don't hold up the line. And if you do order something separate, let it be at a time when it's not so busy. If there's a massive line or something, and you go up there and you want this, that, or the other, don't complain that it's taken extra long, because you're the asshole. I'm not ragging people in general. 99.999% of people are excellent customers. If you're going to ask for that special service, just give us time to produce it. But in general, just order it as is. It's me. I'm not a lettuce or tomato guy. You guys both know that. But I'm not going to hold it up. I go to McDonald's, wherever, with you guys. Quarter pounder with cheese, great. Get that shit, open it up, take off the lettuce, scrape off those little onions, close the bun back up, good to go. Because I don't want to slow down the production guy in the back, the cashier window, you guys, the car behind me. I'm a considerate person, and that's what I do. So
I've
those are
said
my
for
two
many
tips.
years at Starbucks they should have two lines, one for people whose orders are less than 5 words, and then they should have the asshole line for
Perfect.
people whose orders are longer.
Very smart, Dom. I really like that a lot.
Or the other way to break it down is just like one line for people in work clothes and one for people in yoga pants. That's another way to do it.
That's the even
Well,
better way.
any line that involves yoga pants is a good line.
Hey, you can pick. Like, if you have work clothes, you can go in the yoga pants line. It's sort of like the 12 items and under at the supermarket. You can go in the longer line if you have 5 items. That's up to
I
you.
love
But you can't take 40 items in the quick line. You can't take your yoga pants into the business person line.
No, but I can pull up a chair next to the yoga pants line and just sit there and sip my latte and watch.
Yeah, I don't judge. The girls might judge, and they're the ones with the mace, but I don't judge.
Oh, boy.
So, Dan,
All
you
right.
say overall 99% of customers are good ones?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. That's reassuring. All right, fellas. What should we're off next week. So, last question, and then we'll call it a day. What should people do to fill the usual hour that they listen to the show? Recommend something like TV, book, music, anything.
Well, I will go ahead and say you can fill that time with NBA because that's my favorite thing. And then I will also say take an hour and listen to the new Radio Department album. It's worth the hour every time you listen to it. It's so good.
All right. Danny, recommendation for the people?
Oh, man, I really don't have any new exciting music or art or any sort of film critique. I did watch what movie do you want me to do a review of? Oh, Purge Election Year.
Oh, you watched Purge Election Year?
I did.
Oh, does everybody have a couple minutes?
Or should, yeah, go ahead.
No, Dan, if we wait, we're just going to miss our chance.
All right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I should have teased this up front. Here is Dan Partridge's review of The Purge Election Year. I know this is going to be good, and we're just going to end the podcast immediately after. So let me say right now, takethepoints.net, iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, The Fake Tom Z, Harry Hood 11, D Partridge 10. Follow us, reach out. We're off next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our bowl special. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a review by Dan Partridge of The Purge Election Year, the moment you've been waiting for since 30 seconds ago.
It's a little hazy already, but I will do my best. I will start off by saying I was a fan of the first Purge. I thought it had potential, an idea of one day where you can commit any crime you want and kind of get it out of your system, yada, yada. The first one I thought was intriguing. The second one was pretty bad. I thought this one could be a little bit crazy. You know, I knew there was some sort of political plot involved. Turns out this is the worst of the three. You know, it's not close. So here's your basic plot. There's an election, like it says in the title, and one candidate, spoiler alert, old white guy, wants to keep the purges going. Other candidate, younger woman, not a fan of purges. Turns out her whole family was killed during a purge attack, except for her. Pretty good motivation. And pretty coincidental and convenient for a storyline, if you ask me. So we're getting closer to the election. Things are heating up. She takes a slight lead the night before the purge. Night of the purge, all of her campaign people say, okay, come on, we're taking it to the secret location, blah, 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 blah. She said, no, 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 I'm a woman of the people. I'm going to stay in my house and show you that, show the people that the purge doesn't scare me. Which turns out, in retrospect, is a horrible idea. Any chance that you run for president and there's a night where no crimes are illegal, you're going to want to use the protection. So that was a bad move. Right off the bat, her whole security team gets killed. She gets paired up with the guy who's in the second one, who blah, 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 it doesn't matter. He's now a working security. They got to flee in the city, and you know, there's some teenage girls who come out with machine guns, and pretty much the movie just ends because she's safe and they kill some people trying to come after them. But overall, really horrible. No real plot. Some really lame action. Some like ridiculous slow mos to kill time. Overall, really horrible. Disappointed. Awful job by you, Purge. You had potential with the first one, and it's went straight downhill. And I made my girlfriend watch it. You know, I got it on Redbox. I'm like, yeah, I'll watch this movie. It'll be all right. She's like, okay. And she doesn't really like movies to begin with. So, you know, I'm only allowed X amount of movies to watch. Like, it's a very low number. So I burned one of my movies on that piece of shit. So now my number's even lower than it was before. Totally fucked over on that.
That's how I feel when you go to like one of those news sites with a paywall and you only get, 10 articles a month, and you click on one and it's just like a shitty 2-paragraph article, and you're like, damn it, I burned one.
It's exactly what happened. So, really bad movie. I'm already getting hazy with the details. I remember no names of characters already, which is a good sign. So that means it'll be out of my mind completely, probably by Christmas. So we're going to be okay.
So I have questions. Hang on. So first off, is the reason she's such a target because she wants to end purges and it's the pro-purge people are trying to get her?
Yes, that's how it begins, that the pro-purge people are trying to get her.
The purge lobby, so to speak, is after her?
Yes, so then she escapes and there's some random people on the street who just try to kill in general. So she avoids them, and then the pro-purge people eventually capture her, bring her to a ceremony to execute her. Spoiler alert, someone comes in and saves the day and like kills the other candidate. And like the purge looks like it's going to be finished until like the last second they show some bullshit clip where like, I don't know, it looks like it's going to happen again. So,
well, yeah. So that's my follow-up question. Did she win the presidency?
And, no one knows.
And okay, because she can't end the purge because that ends the movies, right?
Correct. So they didn't show the actual election.
Okay. So that's the purge for election day.
It'll probably be next election year, and they'll kill her off just so they can keep the franchise going.
So, I've never seen any of the Purge movies, but what is the reason that they have a Purge?
The Purge is people get all their hate out of their system, and it also encourages them to kill the homeless in this.
So it's like they have so much pent-up aggression, we have to just let them kill everyone one day a year?
Yes, you can do whatever you want. And then because of this, everyone's very productive and happy. And like there like is no unemployment. Like it's at 1% and the economy is through the roof and the government gives everybody all these giant retirement, packages and stuff like that. So
So everybody who now is like unemployed or on welfare, the real problem is they just need to go out and kill someone.
It's really that simple, yes.
So, and why doesn't everybody just like hole up in a bunker on this day?
That's pretty much what they do. Everyone has these very sophisticated home security systems with like metal walls that come down, and they go to, purge parties where they'll, lock down and have some cocktails. But sometimes, spoiler alert again, at one of these parties, someone gets drunk and gets a gun and starts shooting everybody. And that's, again, legal at the party. So be careful who you hang out with.
All right. Seems like some suspect logic to me on why a purge makes the country better. But since this may become reality in a few years, like we don't know.
Ready. Purge 4th of July.
So what have you learned from the movie so that I can prepare myself for the actual purge when it happens in real life?
I would recommend leaving the country during the time because no one's safe anywhere.
So is the purge is only the U.S.? Like if I go to Toronto, there's no purge?
And yes, it's only in the U.S. It's by our government, and it's become so popular that foreigners fly to America for like murder tourism, and they'll stay in houses and get weapons because they can go out and kill in America for one day and then fly back to whatever country they're from.
Well, so can you kill anyone who's in America? Like what if they're not a citizen? Like can you kill someone who's on like a HB1 visa?
Anyone in the United States at that time is fair game.
Okay. So I should build a bunker. I should equip myself with some heavy firepower.
Yep.
What kind canned of food. Yeah, canned food. Do we need canned food? Because it's only one day. I feel like I could just like cook a bunch and put it in some Tupperware.
I'm hungry a lot now. In fact, I'm hungry right now. So it couldn't hurt to have some canned food.
Okay. What if you're in the process of a purge crime and the clock strikes midnight? Do you have to stop?
You have to stop the purge crime immediately or you will go to jail.
What if you shoot someone and they're like still alive and then it turns midnight? Now are you obligated to help them?
I would say you don't have to help them, but you are liable for the murder if they pass away after the time.
All right, last question. On the purge, are you allowed to bet against Alabama as a take the points listener?
No.
Still not allowed.
No, they've not changed that.
Okay. Dan, thank you for answering all my purge related questions.
No problem.
So how many stars would you give this movie?
1.5. Very bad. Very, very bad movie. It doesn't get the flat out 0 or 1 star, but horrible, horrible. God, there's some shitty movies out there. My God.
All right, everyone. Don't watch The Purge. Listen to the
No.
radio department instead.
Yeah.
Ryan, anything you want to add?
The new X-Men Apocalypse sucked. Super disappointed. The one before it was excellent. Probably my favorite of the X-Men movies, and the new one sucked. So I have a red box horror too. That one was no good.
Man, not movies not doing so well. Everybody, just go watch Westworld. Stay away from movies.
Westworld's damn good.
Yeah, I watched
Oh,
one
I
episode.
gotta
We
get
can
into
do
that.
Yeah, we'll do a review of that in a future episode. But for now, I guess we'll just call it a wrap. Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for listening. Back in 2 weeks. Off next week. See you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Later.
Take the point.